Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donald on the Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We come to you every week here at noon. However you may have missed us last week, the whole of Central Iowa was rather busy. What a storm. Oof is right. So we had this amazing windstorm. Everybody.
A derecho.
I think we were off the air, off the grid, we were off of power. And we have honed our coping skills.
What? One notch higher.
Oh boy. Some people in Iowa are just getting power back. And this storm came 1 week and 1 day ago. And it was one we will remember. Such winds over a large area we have not seen in a while. Lots of damage to crops, to hoop houses. Some farmers lost a lot of outbuildings. Market gardeners, things have been stripped off the ground, and grain elevators are crushed like Dixie cups across the landscape. Boy, it was something else, and we're still cleaning up. Central Iowa, Ames here, we are a mess. There is wood biomass all over town.
A lot of trees down.
We are learning to sing along to the song of the chainsaw around here because there is wood and trees all over the place. Still fixing fixing roofs and fixing things that are out. Power outages were a wake-up call to a lot of us. Pretty amazing. Besides the COVID thing going on, here we are waking up and wondering, oh, yes, those essential people that can run chainsaws.
And it's shocking. I mean, in my neighborhood in downtown, so the storm ended roughly around noon or something like that. Within an hour, everywhere. You couldn't imagine how many of your neighbors have chainsaws in their garages. Amazing. It was a happy time for the chainsaw lovers.
Right. But a lot of Christmas presents there, and Father's Day presents. Well, anyway, we're glad we have them because we are still picking things up and will be for quite a while. Parts of Iowa are even worse. Yes, there are crops that are a total loss. And some, actually, a report from my garden is sort of protected. Things just kind of ended up at a 45 degree angle. So I spent time kind of stepping things back up. And a lot of the big honker tomatoes got knocked off. So they're just green hard balls. But everything else, well, not bad, but especially the cities of Cedar Rapids, I guess,
got much worse than here. Ames kind of skated by without as much damage as a lot of other places.
And there was hail south of it. Boy, biblical proportions. So we always have something to talk about. So we weren't on the air last week, but we are back. So we're talking about the storm.
I have to say, one of the gratifying things is when there's trouble, everybody, you know, your neighbors all come out and check and see if everybody's okay. Do you need any help? That sense of pulling together was really evident. And it is always gratifying when something like this happens.
Yeah, it is. There is always, we learn things about ourselves. And also, we had some opportunities to do some quiet nighttime porch sitting.
Yes, we had in town one night with no street lights. It was magnificent.
And even in you could look up, yes, the night sky is still there. The stars, they are still there. Sitting on your front porch, with a candle or even nothing at all and just kind of watching the dark come.
I walked to the end of my driveway and I looked straight up and there was the Big Dipper right over my house. It was magical.
You didn't know it was there, eh?
Well, I hadn't bothered to look for a long time, you know? It's just really lovely.
So we learn things about ourselves and we learn things about our neighbors. And I certainly hope we don't have one of these for another long time. Too much going on. This could be related to climate change. Who knows? The heat wave in California is busy. And oh my. And here we got ourselves a storm. So still picking up. Still picking up. And I want to report, right last Monday, kind of at about 11 o'clock, right as the storm hit, I was dealing with grapes. So my neighbor brought a big Rubbermaid container of lots, a two-person lift-it sort of container full of grapes. And he said, we are sick of eating these grapes. These are wonderful grapes. My kids are sick of eating them. Can you use some grapes? And I never turn anything like that down. So I started cooking down grapes for making juice. And he didn't know what variety this was. It's an old, evidently an old hardy variety because it is really good. It's a good red, not seedless. These are the old fashioned kind.
Real grapes.
Real grapes. And they, they're.
So Lana brought me a little jar of this grape juice. And I have to say, it's not Concord.
No,
it's got a great grape flavor with a little bite behind it, but it is delicious.
There's no
essence of grape.
Essence of grape. There's no sugar.
And there'll be grape jelly.
Grape jelly is in the offing because this wind kind of did a lot for getting me to be on my hobby horse and doing things like picking up crab apples that blew all over the place. So I've been making apples. And dealt with, and I will be using this grape juice to make grape jelly. Yes, you need the juice. A reiteration of terms here. Jelly is clear stuff. Jam is lumpy, pulpy
with
stuff.
The fruit pulp in it. So did you use the jelly bag method?
I used the jelly bag method. I put lots and lots of grapes into it, pot.
Yeah, you cook them down.
And then pour this whole mess into a jelly bag. Or you could just use cheesecloth if you wanted, but jelly bags.
And if you really had to, you could use old cotton pillowcase.
You can use that too. Okay, now I have a really classy way to deal with this. Pour it in there. It's in another pot because the hot juice is coming out already. I gather the jelly bag, tie it off with a really strong piece of twine, leave long ends on the twine, and then I put the jelly bag and the big container on the floor between two chairs, put a broom handle between it, lift the jelly bag off, tie it off,
because you gotta hang it up and let it drip through the cloth. For what, 12 hours maybe?
I do it overnight because it takes a while. It does take a while. And
don't squeeze the bag.
Because I learned that. Uh-huh. Because that makes, not grapes so much, but other kind of juices like plums or apples. That lets little bits of pulp and you won't have a nice clear jelly.
It gets some kind of crystally thing in
it's
you just got to let it hang and the force of gravity will pull it through. Mm-hmm. And don't squeeze it
right for this steaming and cooking of the grapes. I went through and picked off all the major stems because they're kind of green and I didn't want that taste in there, so it was a little bit of a fuss, but I've got lots of juice, and so grape jelly is in the offing.
Did you give the detritus to the chickens?
Here's a report. My chickens don't like grapes.
I thought there was nothing a chicken would eat.
I throw them everything. Of course, after a while, flies and bugs started coming to the grapes, and they really liked that. I've been throwing other things. They love the apple leftovers. They love. They didn't like the grapes. So maybe they're teetotalers. I don't know.
Well, the grapes, if they sit there long enough, they'll ferment.
Then they'll like them.
Drunken chickens.
Then they'll like them. Okay.
Always the sport in the farmyard.
The sport. Okay. Grapes, grape jelly, I've been making for years. So I was sick of doing this because I have plenty of grape juice, thank you, to make jelly. Still had about half of a container left of these fine, fine grapes. What are we going to do with them? So instead of cooking them down, I wanted the yeast and the whatever was on the grapes.
Oh, the wild yeast. Yeah.
So I wanted to get the juice out of it just by pressing. I don't have a wine press, and I was not going to roll up my pants legs and step on. I could have stomped on the grapes, but then dealing with the juice would have been, how do you get it out of there? Okay. So, but we do have a cider press. So I put grapes in.
Cooked or raw?
Raw.
Oh, okay.
In.
So a cold press.
Yeah, a cold press. And we got a couple, about a gallon and a half.
It must have tasted really good also.
Yeah. Actually, this stuff had kind of set for a bit. So maybe
it was already starting to ferment.
So I've got some of this wild pressed stuff. I put it in two clean glass jars, old wine jugs. Put the screw lids on really, really loosely, and actually open them up every now and then. And my friend Ben, you ought to have a friend, Ben, gave me some wild yeast mother starter, and that will help. Getting it going. So it was this kind of unpleasant looking stuff that he dumped in there, but there it is already it is bubbling away. And when you think about it, if I let it set, and if it doesn't blow up or something, I will end up with red wine vinegar, because that is how it is done. So this is my experiment. I'm making some grape vinegar.
What is homebrew?
We'll see. It's kind of burbling away there, and we shall see. It'll turn into something or other. We'll have a vinegar report later. It'll take a while. I think it gets better as it gets older. Yes, it does.
Sometimes.
We'll see. In the meantime, the chickens are no help at all, but they're help with everything else. Well, we have besides grapes, we're going to talk about meat today. And Donna got some information about meat and things going on at Story City Locker, small town north of Ames, and there's a fine locker plant up there.
Yes, so our local locker plant, which is owned by Ty and Bobby Gustafson, they were the first in the state to participate in this new, it's a program the federal government is allowing. Now, this is pretty technical stuff, so maybe you don't realize this, but there are two kinds of state-inspected lockers and federally inspected lockers. Now, state-inspected lockers, which is what Story City Locker is, if you have your animal processed there, you cannot sell it across state lines. You can only sell it in Iowa. So for Ames, we're in the middle of the state, so it's not such a big deal. But with the pandemic, more and more farmers were wondering how they can tap into this market, excuse me, of selling direct from the farm.
Yes, because the COVID outbreaks are happening in the big plants. And actually, if a farmer can connect up with a smaller locker, they can not only get, I think, a better price, but it actually is quite a nice experience to have, to know who your butcher is. So, and Ty and Bobby Gustafson have been doing this for a couple of years, and they're doing a land office business up there.
Yeah. So this new program allows smaller processing plants, those with 25 employees or less, to get federal certification without having a federal inspector there. So when you're on, when an animal is being killed, there must be either a state inspector or a federal inspector present.
It just, they don't help.
No.
Oh,
no. So it's it's rather expensive. They're watching and recording to make sure that all of the laws are followed, that the animal is killed immediately with the first stun. And if it's not, you get a violation and you pay a fine. And it's pretty heavily regulated to make sure it's for animal welfare. It's also for a lot of other reasons, hygiene and quality of meat and all of these things. But it's a major expense for lockers to have to pay these inspectors. So for a small plant, it's often not worth it to pay for the federal inspection. So the USDA recently created a program where smaller local lockers can, if they are state certified, apply, and with, you know, some guidance from the feds and some minimal inspection, they can then use the federal inspection label. So Story City Locker was the first meat plant in Iowa to join this USDA program, and they had a big thing where Chuck Grassley showed up and the Secretary of State of Iowa, Ag Secretary, showed up. And, you know, it's actually a very good thing, and congratulations to Story City for doing it. It will give more marketing options to some of our local farmers. So that was a big deal, and Ty Gustafson, he's the first one to do it.
Good.
Yeah. So bravo to them.
Great.
Now, we do have another story about meat.
Another news item here.
Yeah, this is kind of a follow-up to sort of a couple of months ago we were talking about, and this was very relevant to Iowa because we have a lot of meat processing going on around here. And of course, as the virus spread, the most dangerous thing in Iowa was the large concentration of people working in meat processing plants, because it was very difficult for them to get protective equipment. And it's a pretty messy atmosphere with lots of people working close to each other. And we began to have high rates of infections, and then some plants closed. And, you know, we talked about this at length on the show. So this is a little bit of follow-up report, because what happened is the owners of the packing plants, of course, appealed to the president, basically taking out a large one-page ad in the New York Times and things like that, saying, oh no, if we close the meat plants, you know, basically we're not going to have enough meat for Americans, and then there'll be riots in the street because people have shortages of foods, and da 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 da, big scary thing. And so meat plants were declared by the federal government an essential industry and were not allowed to close, right? So the follow-up story is, I'm going to read this as a little bit from the New York Times. It says, Smithfield's Food was the first company to warn in April that the coronavirus pandemic was pushing the United States, quote, perilously close to the edge in terms of our meat supply. Tyson's Food also sounded the alarm, saying that millions of pounds of meat will disappear from the nation's supply chain as the plants were being forced to close because of outbreaks. Okay, so while they were saying that, how we just might not have enough meat and this was dangerous, that same month, Smithfield, which is owned by a Chinese conglomerate, Smithfield sent to China 9,170 tons of pork, one of its highest monthly export totals to the market in the past 3 years. Tyson exported 1,289 tons of pork to China, the most since January of 2017. In all, a record amount of pork produced in the United States was exported to China in April. So here's the thing. As they were lobbying to get this federal exemption, they were busy selling meat to China. Now, this is a problem. And when Smithfield was allowed to be sold to the Chinese, there was some consideration about that, but they allowed the sale to go through anyway. In 2013, it says that that's when the Chinese company bought Smithfield. So it's been going on for a little while. But the meat packers, when they were crying, oh, we need this federal government dictate that says you cannot close the plants, what they did not publicly emphasize was that keeping the plants open would also protect the long-term investments in exporting to a country that is vital to the growth. The article goes on to say that while pork demand in the U.S. has not gone up significantly, selling it as an international commodity is where the big boom in sales is right now. Until recently, China had been largely self-sufficient in producing their own pork, and it is a very big mainstay in the Chinese diet. But that changed after the African swine fever started decimating the Chinese pig populations into 2018. So it is a big market for American pork. And, you know, the companies afterwards said, oh, yeah, well, we send the Chinese the pigs' feet and the tails and the things that Americans don't really like, which is somewhat true. But the statistics show that they're also sending whole carcasses and lots of them. So I just wanted to let you know that while they sounded the alarm about concern for American consumers and we had to keep these packing houses open, in fact, of course, no big surprise, it was to protect their bottom line because they are exporting very profitably to China.
Boy.
So as Iowans, we need to know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where our meat goes, and there we have it. So check the prices of things, and are we willing to pay the price of things? Oh, my goodness. I have another quickie news item here. This is another sort of in the bummer news department. Did you know you can get salmonella from onions? There has been an onion salmonella outbreak. 640 people have been sick, some hospitalized in 43 states. Most of the onions, all the onions, the big distributor, came from one farm in Bakersfield, California, Thompson International. So, just think, salmonella in onions? But this is the time of summer picnics and onions on your hamburgers and chopped up in takeouts and salads. And so watch out, folks. And most of this stuff from Thompson International onion producers from Bakersfield, California, was sent to big chain food stores and
to wholesalers, restaurants, and retailers. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of brand names, even if your bag doesn't say Thompson. Some of the other brand names were TII Premium, El Campatoir, Hartley Onions, Imperial Fresh, Utah Onions, Food Lion, Thompson Premium, TLC Thompson International, Tender Loving Care, Majestic, and Kroger. So obviously they're being pulled from the grocery stores too, but do check if you can. And if in doubt, as I always say, if in doubt, throw it out, because it would be unpleasant.
And these were not organic onions. So that's another option for you. Find yourself a farmer's market and or some organic onions to tide us over for the summer. Be careful out there.
If you bought your onions at the farmer's market, you're good to go.
There you go. So here, always stay alert and be careful. Aha. I want to remind people that you are listening to KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We are talking about the storm we went through, and we've been talking about meat distribution and the Story City Locker. Grapes, and onions. Boy, we're covering all kinds of things here. We're still gathering our wits from the derecho last Monday. Oh, goodness. Oh, one thing about sitting on porches, Donna, you got out your kerosene lamps. What nice light.
I do like them, and they seem a little calmer than a candle. Maybe it's because they've got the lamp sitting over it and protected, and I usually only get them out for fun on solstice, but they are good to have around in an emergency.
Well done. The kerosene lamps were put into good use. Okay, all you young folk out there, believe it or not, there was a time when we did not have electricity, especially rural areas in Iowa. Rural electric really didn't, come for quite a while. Some of our parents and grandparents didn't have electricity in their farmhouses, but things needed to be done. I'm going to share a little bit here from a book called Little Heathens, Hard Times and High Spirits on an Iowa Farm During the Great Depression by Mildred Armstrong Kalish. Mildred Kalish is a retired professor of English who grew up in Garrison, Iowa, and taught at several colleges, including the University of Iowa. This story is Mildred Kalish's story of growing up on her grandparents' Iowa farm in the depths of the Great Depression. And this is not a sad story of suffering, but it's a tale of childhood. She talks about her family who lived with their grandparents and her mother and her siblings, and they were kind of broken up into the big kids and the little kids for chore purposes, I suppose. But anyway, she was part of the little kids. So I'm going to read from a few paragraphs here, thinking about things that we take for granted. This is from a chapter called Wash Day. How things used to get done. Remember, no electricity for water pumps, heating water, for running the wash machine, for drying, and this is how it went. Though Monday was the official wash day throughout the farm community, preparations usually started Sunday night when all the dirty clothes were collected, sorted, and scrutinized. Mama would ask all the men and boys to empty out their pants pockets and shirt pockets and brush away the chaff, the dirt, alfalfa seeds, and barley beards. All the clothes were then put into a soak in a large galvanized tub of water. The next step was for a couple of big kids to bring the copper oval-shaped boiler up from the cellar and place it on the Monarch kitchen range. And here's where the cooperation began. We little kids would pump cistern water into a 3-gallon galvanized buckets, and the boys would carry them two at a time to fill the boiler and the reservoir on the range. We used cistern water, which is rainwater collected and stored in the cistern, usually 30 to 40 feet deep and lined with stones, because rainwater, unlike well water, is soft. In fact, there is a saying in Iowa that well water is so hard you have to bite it out of the cup. But since it doesn't allow suds to form and is harsh on the skin, washing was done in soft cistern water. The laundry soap was also prepared Sunday night. Grandpa shredded 1 1/2 bars of P&G Fell's naphtha into a green marbleized graniteware pan and put it on the back of the stove until the next day.
Well, at least they didn't have to make their own soap.
I think that was an option, but they must have been a high rolling farm family if they bought the Fell's naphtha. Once wash water was brought to a boil, Monday morning, the heavy, awkward, round wooden washing machine was moved into the kitchen, filled with water, and the soap added. All the clothes were washed in the same water in order of whiteness and cleanliness. White clothes first, bed linens, followed by hand and dish towels, colored clothes, and finally the work shirts and work clothes, in order to operate the washing machine paddles. Once the clothes were put in, you had to do this by hand. Push, pull, push, pull, push pull 15 minutes for every load. That's where both the big kids and little kids took turns. Once the clothes were clean using a wooden wash stick, we lifted them out of the steaming water and put them through hard rubber rollers of the hand wringer into the rinse water, and then wring them again through the rubber rollers. And this too was a manual thing, two-person activity. One person turning the handle of the wringer while another rinsed the clothes by hand, fed them through rubber rollers, and ejected them into a wicker wash basket below. Then the whole process started over again with the next load of clothes. We considered it a badge of honor to get all the clothes on the line by 10 o'clock in the morning. There were a few years where the women in the town of Garrison, Iowa, hung their panties and bras inside a pillowcase to conceal them from the eyes of any lascivious male who passed by while the unmentionables were drying. But people made fun of this practice, and soon it was abandoned. I don't recall ever engaging in that bit of silliness on the farm. That was a little bit from Mildred Kalish's story of growing up on her grandparents' farm called Little Heathens, Hard Times During the Great Depression. Well, I do not remember no electricity, but yes, there were wringer washers and mom hung clothes on. As a matter of fact, I like to hang clothes on the line. And there is something called starch. What the heck is starch? One starches things. I remember my mom used to starch things. After all that, after all that trouble, all the stuff going, and this is people, well, of course, you wear your finest to the Sunday services, I'm sure, and Sunday school and everything, but starching shirt fronts and starching dresses, it seems an awful fuss.
Well, I don't think anyone really starches anything anymore.
I don't think so.
But when I was younger, we had spray starch. So while you're ironing, you can spray the starch onto the, and you get that starched effect, which is rapidly crumbles once you wear it. So it's a little futile, I guess. Maybe that's why we stopped doing it.
We have permanent press now. Boy, are we ever good.
Yeah, but or see, the rumpled look.
The rumpled
look. I'm big on the rumpled
look. Yeah, that's good. So remember, as we're putting our towns back together and welcoming electricity back into our lives, it didn't always used to be so easy to do things because electricity is kind of, you know,
It's a perk.
It's a perk. Yeah, it is. And bluing. What the heck is bluing? I remember bluing.
Well, bluing still is used. You know how when you've got white towels or white sheets, and after a number of washings, they start to look yellow instead of bright white?
I thought it was just my washing machine.
No, even mine. And, you know, and I don't have particularly hard water, but it's just over time they get kind of dingy looking. So bluing is actually... And it doesn't take much. Like you can still buy it at the grocery store. In fact, I have a bottle of Mrs. Stewart's concentrated liquid bluing, whitens white clothes safely. And it is biodegradable, by the way, but you must dilute it and put it in the final rinse, and it doesn't take much. But it does return it. You know, if you think about it from the color spectrum, the blue cancels out the yellow, and it kind of reverts the whole thing back to a bright white.
Well, see, there you go. Washing clothes in the time of a power outage or no power at all.
Now, I do remember, now I don't iron anymore unless under very rare circumstances, right? But we used to also have to, before steam irons, we used to have to sprinkle the clothes as well. Yep. And because you wanted them slightly damp, just slightly before you iron them. Because with no steam iron, it's much harder to press it out if it's just dry.
That's true.
All these modern inventions, right. my.
How do we have the time? Washing on Monday, and then you should, well, I remember ironing on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. Besides everything else. So there we go. It's kind of nice to remember.
Yes, and ironing is a skill set.
Oh, it is.
I was taught by my Aunt Elsie, who just passed this year at 102. God bless her. She taught me the order in which you iron. First, you start with the collar, and then the sleeves, and then the back placket, and then the back, and you do the front last because, you know, as you're turning the shirt around, it gets a little wrinkled. So you save the front for last because then it's the most perfect.
Ha! Ironing. Oh, dear. Well, that sort of stuff goes on in the kitchen too. Oh dear, oh dear. I like washing clothes, and I like hanging clothes on a clothesline. And the idea that we have more permanent press stuff, and actually if you hang up your clothes nicely, or you know, kind of in a tidy fashion, you don't really have to iron.
You don't have to iron. I do a lot of linen, and so when I hang it up, I pull on the seams so it's not rumpled, and make sure the hems aren't rumpled, and then they dry like that. And that's good enough for me.
I like good enough is good enough.
Good enough.
Yeah. Good. Well, I'll recommend this book to anybody that wants a good story.
Yeah, it's a charming read.
A Little Heathens, Hard Times and High Spirits on an Iowa Farm During the Great Depression by Mildred Armstrong Kalish. It's fun. Quite some adventures. Very good. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more information about the Donalana Kitchen and this fine community radio station at www.khoyfm.org. If you go to that website, you can listen on that website, which means you can listen all over the world, and you can find past shows. You can listen to the Donalana Kitchen more than once. You can find the Donalana Kitchen website. Uh-huh. And the website has past shows on it. It also has recipes. We have a recipe page there. So do that. It's fun. KHOI Community Radio. A little bit of a garden update here. I mentioned that after the storm, I kind of set my plants back up, and they seem to be okay. They didn't like it, but there they are. I have a whole nice big patch of okra. I love growing okra. A couple of earlier this season, in February, we did a show that included a book called The Whole Okra by Chris Smith, another good book, and he talked about growing okra. Now is a fine time for okra because it's no longer knee high. I no longer have to bend over to pick all the okra. And you do pretty much have to pick it every day this time of year.
Yeah, because they get too big and woody.
You got to be right. Johnny on the spot with okra. Now it's about as tall as I am now. And which means it's right up there. I can pick it. It's handy. Thank you, okra plants, for growing up and making harvesting much, much easier.
And thank you for picking, Lana. I have been enjoying your okra. I did a recipe last week that I had never done before. I made it sort of Asian. I cooked it in, of course, onions and garlic. And then I cooked it in coconut milk and put a little Thai basil in with it and a little soy sauce. It was delicious.
Ha! I never have tried it.
Yeah, I usually go more Cajun and, you know, tomatoes it's always good that way. But this was a fun experiment.
Yeah. People complain about slimy okra. Well, yeah, if you cut it open and you stew it a long time, of course, it's probably the only vegetable that comes with its own gravy. It kind of comes out there and thickens things. That's good. But you don't have to eat it like that. I like to pick little ones and cook the thing and stir fry.
Great. If you don't cook them so not so long in the heat, and they don't get quite as goopy.
They don't let them break apart. I like to pan fry them so they're kind of crispy. Mm-hmm. Crispy. That's good. We also have, there's a recipe on the Donalana Kitchen webpage that I got from Peggy Earnshaw, and she was an okra lover from Ames, and she gave it this recipe to me, bought okra from me at the Ames Farmers Market when I was selling there, and she said, you gotta try this. And it's on the website. It's a sweet sour okra with olive oil, okay? 1 pound of okra, 3 tablespoons lemon juice, 4 to 6 tablespoons olive oil or more. 1 tablespoon honey or sugar, 3/4 cups water, sea salt, and freshly ground black pepper to taste. Serve with chopped parsley. Trim off the stems, but just leave those little pods whole, and then marinate that okra on a ceramic plate in half of the lemon juice. And do that for about 2 hours. And then heat the olive oil, add the okra, and gently, gently cook until the pods are very lightly browned, about 5 minutes. Stir carefully and drizzle the honey or sugar over the okra, add salt and pepper, and cover and simmer. Add the water if it needs a little more water. Transfer to a serving dish, sprinkled with parsley. Oh, I think, it's on the website and I haven't tried this. Putting lemon juice with your okra. That sounds good.
Sugar sounds interesting.
Yeah, she says it's a recipe from the Greek tradition. So okra is enjoyed all over the world. Well, okra, like I said, it's out there. It's coming, great guns. And those okra flowers are so pretty. So I'm out there and I visit my okra patch once a day, because if I don't, there's these big baseball bats of okra that happen. And those I break off and throw to my sheep, who absolutely love okra. So the sheep get, I make sure that the fence between my garden and the sheep pen is really secure this time of year, because I can see I can see their little brains working, but they do get the okra pods that are way, way, way too big. Nothing goes to waste. That's nice. It's nice. It's nice to kind of recycle everything. Well, I want to talk about the magic of the garden. I have another book to share here. Garden Spells, an enchanting collection of Victorian wisdom by Claire Naimed. She's put together a bunch of different books about spells and being weather wise and things that
old wisdom
things that we probably all used to know, but we don't anymore. She says a garden is a holy place, from the concept of the Garden of Eden as humanity's mystic point of origin to the ideas of the paradise as a garden. It represents the realm of final homecoming, which we strive to and aspire to. Gardens seem to enshrine our consciousness as the alpha and omega of spiritual experience. And she makes lists of things, talking to the fairies out there. Yes, you can believe in fairies, and how to talk to the toads and the squirrels and the birds and everything. And these special things that flowers have to teach us too. Before the internet and all the emojis and all this sort of thing, people used to use bouquets of flowers, because each flower had a special meaning. It was the language of flowers, floriography. People used to send romantic bouquets.
Floriography?
Saying things like, oh, acacias for elegance and let me see.
Well, we all know roses are for love.
Yes. Mountain ash is for prudence. Buckthorn is for repose. Bluebell is for constancy. Begonia, warning, be careful there. So if people used to kind of keep track of all this stuff and sending things along. I looked up marigold, because there's lots of marigolds out now. After all, it's the height of summer. Marigold indicates jealousy. Be careful, you're jealous. Your jealousy is without foundation, however, so you're dealing with it. Marigolds is an old country name for the marigold, is summer's bride, because it so faithfully spreads its petals at first light and closes them again as the sun sinks. The flower is a symbol of constancy and endurance, uses of wedding garlands, lover's posies, and love charms. Oh, yes. It's nice. Well,
you can also use the leaves to dye things yellow, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I don't do this, but I've heard if you can feed, now this one, they one thing that the chickens will eat, the yellow in the marigolds is actually taken up and put into the yellow of the yolks for the chickens.
It's probably a carotenoid.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, they're edible flowers.
And Like she also talks about bees. Bees. We've talked about bees here. And I hope there's bees in your garden, because I don't know what in the world a garden would be without bees. Here's what she says about bees. Bees are said to come from paradise and to have a special connection with the planet Venus. They are traditionally revered as divine messengers, foretellers of future, wise guardians of secrets, and little winged servants of God who hum anthems of praise. Oh, yeah, they do. They do. All the time they do. And think of them on Christmas Eve humming the 100th psalm at midnight to honor the birth of Christ. They're little priests of the garden, and they cannot bear blasphemy or swearing. So watch it. Watch it. They portray purity. Tradition says when a virgin can walk unarmed through unharmed through a swarm of bees, huh? I'm not going to test that out. If you have a hive, you must tell the bees the family news, or they will leave, and they cannot remain where there is anger or hatred in a household. And if a family member has died, they must be allowed a period of mourning. So bees live with us. One of the magic things of the garden. That's from a small book called Garden Spells, Enchanting Collection of Victorian Wisdom by Claire Namad. It's got lovely little illustrations. And it also has wonderful information if you want to connect up with your local garden fairies. She talks about them as they are there. And here are some spells and some ways to address the little fellers. Yes, they are. Very good. Very good. Well, what's growing in your garden? Did the storm kind of knock things over?
There were a few things I lost, and those big, tall Mexican sunflowers, which I had very carefully tied up because they do fall over. So some of the taller sprouts fell down, but there's plenty left, and the bees and the butterflies are just loving it. And mostly, I have a lot of herbs right now. Tomorrow, for my neighbor Ingrid Anderson's birthday, I'm going to make black currant leaf ice cream. That's just the leaves, not the currants. And lemon verbena Madeleine cookies, because the lemon verbena is just glorious right now.
Oh, it is. It is.
Oh, it is. It's so pretty and it smells so good. You just brush up against it and you're instantly happy.
Ooh, lemon verbena. Yes. Good time to kind of go through your garden. And if things need to be plucked and dried, do it before things go to flower.
How's your basil doing?
Well, I've planted it at different times. The Japanese beetles seem to like the green basil.
Oh, dear.
And are doing a nasty bit. But I've got different basil at different heights. I do have basil. And actually, they don't seem to be bothering the purple basil much.
They're selective, they
kind of land on one plant, and so I'm way beyond being squeamish. I just go and squash them, but
it is satisfying. They crunch.
So yeah, basil's doing good, and I have a fine plant, lemon verbena, and I like to start plucking stuff and drying stuff and making teas to use to make kombucha with, and to just plain have some herb teas of my very own, kind of some that have lots of mint in them, some that have lots of lemon in them, and I have some tulsi basil too. Basil that, it doesn't taste like basil.
It's called holy basil. Yeah. It doesn't taste like basil.
It's floral.
It's medicinal.
Medicinal, yes it is. Yeah, and I like, that actually makes a nice tea, and it's a soothing tea if you kind of have the flu or something, you don't feel so good. Tulsi basil, I don't know. I like that smell. I like that taste. So,
but don't try to cook with it. You will be disappointed.
No. It's like cooking with perfume. You don't do that. But we all learn new things. Yes, we do. Well, we've been talking about lots of fun stuff here and how we have weathered the storm. Oh, yes. I hope we don't give up sitting on porches and taking our time and being quiet. And we can take some good things for this.
Well, I must say, for the moment, when the winds came, it did blow the mosquitoes away.
Oh, very good. See, always
didn't last, but
very good.
There were a couple nights there where there just wasn't much mosquito action.
Ah, Very good. Let's see, there's some upcomings on in Ames here, Central Ames. KHOI, this fine community radio station, which gets by with your support, is having a fundraiser estate sale, and that is the last weekend of August. Stay tuned for more information, and there will be probably really good ways of doing that with your mask on, please, and we'll spread things out. There will be fine things, and support this radio station by coming and finding things to buy. It could be fun, and it's at a house right here in town that is easy to find, and more information will be coming up because, yes, we get by with your support, and this is one way that you can help. And I do believe there is a concert, a live outdoor concert, as part of that event, or soon to be around that event sometime, or it will be fun anyway. Stay tuned.
Yeah, and we're trying to figure out how to do all of this safely with our masks on and appropriately distanced. So,
yes,
we can show up in public, but we got to behave.
We can learn to do this. I'm learning how to smile with my mask on, and you have to think a little bit. Who the heck is that person that's talking to me? Because we have our mask. We can do this. We can do this. And lots of stores are requiring masks, and I think that's a good thing. We can do this. Even with all the students coming back, this is a college town, folks. So we shall see. Lots of students coming back, and we'll see how this works out. I hope they're wearing their masks too. I want to mention that the Donalana Kitchen will be preempted this evening. We usually are repeated at 7 p.m. on Tuesday evenings on this fine radio station, but there is this thing called the Democratic Convention is going on, and people are probably watching that, and it'll be on this fine radio station too. So tune in and listen. Lots of important stuff going on. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We had music today from the band Contratopia with original tunes by John Gooden. Also in the band, Eric Sessions, Pat O'Loughlin, and Patrice Paquise. Yes, that's Contratopia. And the reels are Loaves and Fishes, Too Many Goats, and Pork and Walnut. All tunes by John Gooden. John Gooden is a songwriter. So support this fine radio station. Donate. Hit the donate button on the website. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.